You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like Eco Eye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
The Kakadu plum is an Australian native superfood containing 100 times more vitamin C than oranges. So why have you never heard of it? PR. No one's drinking a Kakadu smoothie? I'm JB Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, 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 hey.
Welcome back to the show. What is that?
Hey, 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 hey.
Da, 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 da,
oh,
da,
no,
da.
It's Jimmy Fallon.
I know.
Sorry. Well, it's the Roots.
Yeah, it's the Roots.
We'll give it to the
that
Roots.
That is cooler than Jimmy Fallon, I guess.
Well, I'm excited. It is late November, and you all know what that means. It's almost my birthday.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah.
National holiday.
Truly a day to give thanks for. I do all the time. 22. Can't believe it. 22. Am I talking about the year or my age? Who's to say? Who knows?
It's not his age.
Hey, hey.
Now we all know.
Age is just a number and a feeling in your body. That's what I've learned.
That correlates greatly with the feelings in your body.
Yeah, but that's okay. I'm excited for my birthday. Hey, how's, you know, everybody out there's got a birthday. It's not that special. I hope yours is great. Maybe it's today. Happy birthday to all the people whose birthday is today. And you can go back and re-listen to this episode on your birthday, and it'll be like, I personally wished you a happy birthday.
Wow. What a good job.
Watch, this is going to be our most replayed episode of all time.
All right. Put a pin in that. We'll come back to this.
But I think this is a great episode to be our most listened to episode of all time because it's a very cool story. Very exciting. Another one that just started small and just kept getting bigger and bigger and bigger because, y'all, Imperial China is just the most fascinating place. I mean, talk about Game of Thrones style drama going on.
Oh my God.
It's that times 10. I can't believe it. And we say this all the time on our show. And one of these days, somebody's got to give us a TV contract. But this one, oh man, I'm seeing a easy 10 seasons out of this. Easy. And that's if we cut half the characters.
Oh my God.
It's so good. Because this is the story of Emperor Xuanzang in 8th century China. And this guy was part of the Tang Dynasty, and he had many, many lovers throughout his life. He was married. He had consorts and concubines, as a lot of the emperors did back then. But they were not just lovers. They were all working behind the scenes. This is mm-hmm. definitely one of those scenarios where behind every great man, there was 8 or 10 scheming women trying to take control of themselves because they did wield a lot of power. Mm-hmm. And we're going to hear all about their various machinations and schemes. And I say we just dive right into it because this story is wild.
Let's go.
Hey there, friends, come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all, an abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
The Tang Empire in China was an imperial dynasty that lasted for about 300 years, between 618 and 907 AD. And this is one of China's greatest periods. It's considered to be a golden age of culture. And China earned a reputation during this time across the world for their contributions to arts like poetry and music. And one of the rulers most dedicated to being a total art boss was Emperor Xuanzang, who started his rule in 712 AD. He was born with the name Li Longji, and this guy was the grandson of Empress Wu Zetian before him, and she was a very intense and badass empress, and the only woman to legitimately rule China in all of its history. And yeah, we are going to do an episode about her.
Don't worry.
Oh, she's got so much.
She has been on the list for a long time.
Yes. The end of her rule, spoiler alert, was in 705, and it left a real vacuum for power. And things got a little rocky after that.
So after a few complicated years of classic royal familial politics, Li Longji, along with the help from his aunt, Princess Taiping, helped put his father back on the throne as Emperor Ruzong in the year 710. But Longji and Taiping were really the ones in charge here. The emperor didn't do anything without consulting them first. When his advisors came to discuss political affairs, his first question was always, did you ask Princess Taiping? And if they said yes, he said, okay, did you ask Longji? And then he would make his decision based on whatever they thought.
Wow. So like the ultimate, like not even go ask your mother, but go ask your aunt and then go ask my son. Go ask your aunt and then ask your cousin.
I love an emperor that's clearly like, I don't want this like, job.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the chair and all the stuff, but right, I don't right. want the job.
He didn't really, too. I mean, you know, didn't want to get too into the history, but this is his second time being emperor.
Mm.
He was emperor before Wu Zetian.
Right.
And got knocked out, came back. Is a lot going on back then.
No wonder he was kind of like, I thought I was done uh-huh. with this whole thing. So why don't y'all do it?
Yeah, Princess Taiping wanted me in this position. So if she wants it, she can handle it. Mm-hmm. You go ask her.
Let her deal with it.
Uh-huh.
So with Longji and Taiping both being consulted on everything, naturally, the two of them were locked into a power struggle as well.
Yeah, Taiping herself had been involved in like 2 coups already. So she was pretty good at getting what she wanted.
She's the coup queen.
Yeah. She's like, you want a coup? Call 1-800-Taiping. You need coups? I got coups. I got revolutions. I got overthrowings. I got it all. In fact, by the year 711, she had accumulated so much power under Emperor Ruzong's rule that she had his administration cleaned out and just replaced everyone with chancellors that she liked. But Li Longji had also been instrumental in putting his father on the throne, and he had already been named his heir, even though he wasn't Ruzong's eldest son. But like even the eldest son said, yeah, it shouldn't be me. It should be Li Longji. Make it that guy. He said, I don't want it either. Dad's right. This job sucks.
Right, for real.
Hey, little bro, you know what you're doing. Why don't you take it?
Get all these coup queens running around.
Right, yeah, I don't want to
be in charge.
Everybody's getting cooed on.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy was in line for the throne, and Princess Taiping got to scheming and dropping hints to the emperor that maybe Li Longji wasn't so trustworthy.
Mm.
He's like, your son, he's scheming against you.
Now, at this time, Li Longji had a wife named Princess Wang. But being a young, fancy prince himself, he also had consorts and concubines galore, plenty of girlfriends running around, side pieces, etc.
Mm-hmm.
And a favorite of his, Yang Guipan, got pregnant. But Longji was really worried that Princess Taiping, you know, wouldn't want him to have a bunch of sons.
Right.
And that she might target his lover if she found out. Because Li Longji had two sons already with different consorts.
She's like, that's too many sons.
She's like, you got too many. Yeah, too many people could grab at this power. I'm not trying to hear that.
It is so interesting. They play such a long game. You know, so someone can see, like, if you have a son today, 15, 16 years from now, that's a powerful enemy of mine.
Right.
And I got to think 16, 20 years ahead sometimes, because that's how long some of their schemes take to play out.
Crazy.
Yeah.
So Li Longji is like, well, let me get ahead of it. And he starts to prepare a stew that in ancient Chinese medicine was thought to terminate pregnancies. Mm. But he took a little nap while it was cooking, and he dreamt that a god came down and flipped the stew pot over.
Oh.
So he woke up, he told his close friend, Zhang Shuo, about the whole situation and the dream. And Zhang Shuo responded, quote, it is heaven's will. You should not worry. So the child was born. His name was Li Sisheng. And of course, he grew up to really like Zhang Shuo, who saved him from becoming a stew baby.
It's like, yeah, I heard that story that you talked my dad out of giving my mom this stew. Thanks. But it's kind of sweet, too, because I think that Li Longji at this point, like, really loved Yang Guipan because he wasn't worried about him having another son. He was more worried about her safety.
Right.
That's why he wanted to give her that stew. Be like, if you're pregnant, you're in danger.
Mm-hmm. No, I see. I could see what he thought he was up to. Yeah, for sure.
But he turned out okay. Both Li Sisheng and Yang Guipin, they turned out okay. Okay. She did not go for them.
Okay, cool. She let them relax.
Mm-hmm. But in late 712, Princess Taiping started making moves. She went to the imperial astrologers and she sort of strongly suggested that they go tell Emperor Ruzong, hey, your constellation in the sky is a little off. It sort of suggests that something about your leadership will change very soon. So they went and told him that Princess Taiping is thinking that the emperor is going to hear this and think, oh, shit, my son is probably going to try and overthrow me. I better cut him loose. Because again, coups all the time.
Sure.
I mean, his grandfather overthrew the emperor. He overthrew the emperor, so logical conclusion, my son will do the same.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Emperor Ruzong was tired of that shit. He was so sick of coups, and he decided that instead of fighting it, why don't we just get ahead of it? He said, if my rule is about to change, let's not wait for a coup to happen. I'll just go ahead and hand over the throne to my son now in an orderly transition. Then prophecy comes true. Bing, bang, boom. Nothing bad happens. Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, so, wow.
Taiping, of course, is super pissed. This is the opposite of what she wanted. She's like, no, don't do that. That's the last thing you want to do.
She goes to her room and she's like, learned a lesson about coups today. Don't try to overthrow a guy who don't want the throne in the first place.
Seriously. Dear Diary.
101 Lessons About Coups by Princess Taiping.
By the expert herself.
The expert herself.
Well, the emperor, of course, insisted, no, I'm doing this. I don't care what you say. And he retired and he gave the empire to Longji, who became Emperor Xuanzang.
Well, obviously, within a year, Taiping is plotting a coup against Emperor Xuanzang.
Girl can't help it.
Okay, she's like, this is what I do, all right?
I may
as well deny my own breath coming in and out.
It's cool to coup. She had that on her t-shirt.
So Emperor Xuanzang regularly took this like herbal Viagra so that he could keep up with the many, many ladies that he was constantly entertaining.
Mm-hmm.
So Taiping was plotting to get one of his ladies in waiting to poison him with this tincture.
Oh.
But word got out, people caught wind of the plan, and they advised him to act first. So long story short, he sent a bunch of soldiers out and caught or executed all Taiping's advisors and chancellors that she had in her pocket.
Mm.
Princess Taiping fled to a temple in the mountains. But Emperor Xuanzang ordered her to commit suicide. This was like a common alternative for aristocrats and high-ranking officials because emperors didn't like ordering their executions. Mm. I guess it felt a little off, like
yeah,
like the family is around at Thanksgiving and you're like, take her out back and shoot her. It's kind of
yeah,
weird.
Like they
so
would...
he's like, you take yourself out back and shoot yeah, you. I guess
you do it. It's weird. They had the death penalty for commoners, but it was like gauche for an emperor to order death. So he's like, just go kill yourself. Then I didn't do it. It's so weird.
My hands are clean.
But it's very common. And in at least in the history I read, every time someone was ordered to do it, they just did. I mean, you know, they're probably like, well, I'm going to, if I don't, they'll just kill me anyway. So I've got my honor to keep, you know, I don't want to also be treasonous and defy the emperor's order. Wild.
All right. I guess they probably would send someone with the message like, hey, you've been ordered to commit suicide and we will stand here and watch
oh, man.
You do it.
Yeah. Well,
because otherwise it feels like a really easy one to be like, hey, will you dash off a letter to the emperor that I am fully dead, gone, no problem whatsoever, and I will just take my ass to the next town.
Here's a nice crisp 20. Why don't you tell him that I cut my own bowels open?
I'm about to go open a tea shop somewhere.
Uh-huh.
Or something.
My name is now Lucy, and I don't live anywhere near here. You never heard of me before. But this is so interesting. Between the two of them, I think there was so much tension between the emperor and Princess Taiping, like that had obviously been there for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was one of these situations where they were just waiting for the right opportunity. And I think Princess Taiping jumped the gun a little bit and the emperor was able to go, ah, gotcha. Now I can order your death.
She's like, well, charge it to the game.
Yep. Now with Princess Taiping gone, now Emperor Xuanzang's rule was secure. Worldhistory.org says that due to his early policies in reforming laws and streamlining bureaucracy and providing for the people, Xuanzang is one of China's greatest monarchs in history. His first 28 years were called the Kaiyuan period, and it's considered among China's most prosperous and wealthy eras. First, he wiped out a bunch of unnecessary bureaucrats who had over the years all like basically bought their positions of power. And after that, he made it nearly impossible to purchase political power anymore.
Funny that that's important.
Yeah.
It's
like, this, you are all unnecessary. You just paid to be here. It reminds me of my high school football team, because it was such a like, I went to kind of a rich school and the football was like the most important thing. And there were kids who, you know, their parents made a little donation and they ended up on the team. And for 4 years, they didn't play. We had like 40 people on the sidelines on our team that didn't play.
God.
But it was on their college apps, you know?
I was just about to say,
that's all they needed.
Just been for that college application.
Oh, it was crazy. I remember going to those games and sitting and being like, what are those 50 people for? And I was like, yeah, they're on the team, but they won't play. So weird. So Xuanzang kicks all these guys off the team. He revitalized the capital city's canal system, which had fallen into ruin under previous leaders.
Very important.
And he brought a lot of surrounding areas under China's rule. He expanded the Tang Empire to about 4 million square miles, which is nearly twice what it was.
Wow.
This is, of course, both diplomatic and a little militaristic action that ended up doing this.
Naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Emperor Xuanzang was not just a ladies' man and a savvy ruler. He was also an outstanding calligrapher.
Ooh.
He loved music and art. He's a big horse guy. He owned a troupe of dancing horses,
cool,
according to history.com. And he brought a renowned horse painter named Han Gan into his court, who would become the most famous horse painter in Chinese history.
Awesome.
I mean, this guy parties. This is a pretty cool dude. Also, fun fact, there's a crater named for Han Gan on Mercury.
Oh, cool.
Maybe it's shaped like a horse.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be kind of cool.
Let's go check it out.
Speculation station, it's shaped like a horse. Don't tell me any different. Xuanzang was also an extreme poetry fan. Mm. You know how we feel about poetry around here. So he invited a poet named Li Po into his academy. And Li Po writes beautiful, evocative, very visual poems. But he also writes a lot of verses about being drunk. And we've got to pepper this episode with some of these pickled poems. So let's go down to Poetry Corner and hear The Mountain Drinking Song from Li Po.
To drown the ancient sorrows, we drank 100 jugs of wine. There in the beautiful night, we couldn't go to bed with the moon so bright. Then finally the wine overcame us, and we lay down on the empty mountain. The earth for a pillow,
and a blanket made of heaven.
He's straight up like, I'm going to write a poem about how we passed out in the mountains last night without going into our tent.
We drank 100 jugs of wine.
Then I blacked out.
I've had that night.
He's like, we blacked out. I mean, we had a blanket made of heaven.
Yeah, right. And I don't remember what it felt like.
All right. So Xuan Song and his wife, remember, who's now Empress Wang, they had a strong relationship for a few years. And while there's not a lot of information about her, we don't even know her given name. We only know her empress name. It is said that she was instrumental to his rule. She provided a lot of counsel and suggestions that helped him in his early years. She even apparently played a part in helping Xuanzang's father take the throne before him. And she helped him deal with Princess Taiping.
Oh, she's in on that coup action, too.
All right. Really feels like she probably should have written some of this shit down for us. She was a pretty cool lady. Now, Empress Wang never gave the emperor a son, but she did raise his son, Li Sesheng, that he had with a different consort, Yang Guipen.
Yeah, the stew baby.
The stew baby.
Yeah.
He had the stew baby.
Yeah, she raised him, yeah.
And Sesheng got a great education. Xuanzang really admired him.
Mm-hmm. Now, there is a ranking system for consorts inside the palace. Now, the empress, of course, absolute top of the list, number one woman, HBIC. Mm-hmm. As soon as Xuanzang was named emperor, he elevated his wife, princess, up to empress as well.
Mm-hmm.
Now, under that, there are four consort rankings: noble, pure, virtuous, and then able. Under that, there are 9 imperial concubine rankings, like Lady of Bright Deportment, or Lady of Cultivated Beauty, or Complete Countenance.
Ooh.
And then there's a few more even below that, like the Lady of Handsome Fairness, or the Lady of Talents, or the Lady of Treasure, etc., etc., etc. Lots of titles.
This is really reminding me of the David Mamet movie, State and Maine, making a movie.
Yeah.
And the guy's like, oh, I think I'm an associate producer. He's like, yeah, everybody's an associate producer. It's what you give your assistant instead of a raise. It feels like there's like, I don't know, make a bunch of titles to make them think that this is a good job.
Right, right. These are all, I mean, it's just like a ranking system for all his girlfriends, basically.
Wow. Imagine being the Lady of Treasure.
She's way down there.
She's like, sounds big, but it's not. The able consort is ahead of me.
But one of his favored ladies was a woman named Zhao, and she went from being a prostitute who could sing and dance to all the way become the second highest ranking consort in the palace.
Ooh.
Really climbed that ladder. And she was the one who had his earliest sons. Remember, he had 2 already when Li Sesheng was born.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, Li Ying, was named crown prince and heir to the throne in 715. He was also not the oldest son. There was technically one, his other brother was 1 year older than him, but that guy had a serious injury and it was like, took him out of the running, basically.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So no one was worried about him coming out of nowhere.
Nope. Li Ying was firmly in that position.
All right. So yeah, we've got a lot of players on the board here. Emperor Xuanzang is married to Princess Wang, or Empress Wang now. Together, they're raising his son, Li Sesheng, the stew baby, and the emperor's son with consort Zhao is crown prince Li Ying. Everyone's getting along. Things are going great. Palace Christmases are lovely, whatever. But another consort was about to rise to the top, and she was ready to bust heads and take what she wanted, take no prisoners. Her name was consort Wu, and we'll learn about her right after these words.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Hello there. I'm Ann Thompson, editor-at-large for IndieWire.
And I'm IndieWire's deputy film editor, Ryan Latanzio.
And we're the co-hosts of IndieWire's weekly Screen Talk podcast.
Join us each week for an in-depth discussion of the latest in film and TV industry news with special guests along the way, including filmmakers and executives.
Hear from us every Friday morning on iHeart platforms or wherever you get your podcasts as IndieWire shares what we've learned from the movie week that was.
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Welcome back, everyone. Let's head back to Lee Poe's Drunken Poetry Corner with a verse called Drinking in the Mountains.
Mountain flowers open in our faces. You and I are triply lost in wine. I'm drunk, my friend. Sleepy. Rise and go. With your dawn lute, return if you wish and stay.
This one's great because he's like, I'm real drunk, all right? Why don't you go and get some music?
Yeah,
come back
with some music.
We'll start the party over again.
I love it. I also love that the last poem was called The Mountain Drinking Song.
Uh-huh.
And this one is called Drinking in the Mountains. Like,
Lee Poe's like, write what you know.
Yeah. I like two things. I like mountains and I like drinking in the mountains.
He's probably like, I like drinking any place, but I live in the mountains. So I also love this. If it's mountain people, like Appalachian mountain people.
Oh, sure.
Like be same very poem. Similar shit. I'm drunk, my friend. Sleepy. Why don't you go on go? Come on back with a guitar and we'll have us a good old time. I'm ready for the Appalachian version of Lee Poe, if anyone wants to take a crack at it.
Mountain folk, they're so similar everywhere you go.
Love it.
Whatever the mountains.
Whichever mountain.
These Lee Poe poems about drinking are hilarious and wonderful, but he does have some beautiful poetry. So go look it up, because I was reading them and I was like, damn, this is gorgeous.
Oh, man.
But then I kept finding other more and more poems about drinking, and I'm like, okay, buddy.
Well, this is a sidetrack, but that's one of the things I love so much about Chinese and like Japanese culture was that everybody wrote poetry. It was just like a thing everyone did. And so you have so many people who are really very good poets who would write beautiful literature poems, you know, that you would want to like read for ages. And then there were some people who were like, I wrote a haiku about fucking my wife behind a bar last night. You know, like you're just like the most ridiculous. So oftentimes they were just for comedy reasons.
Right.
There's just a form of entertainment. And I just love that. I think that would be so fun to bring it back, make everybody write a quick poem about whatever they feel like.
And Lee Poe somehow did both.
Somehow. Some people can do both.
Yeah. Get you a poet who can do both.
Exactly.
That's what Xuanzang did. He was like, get this guy in my court. He is now poet laureate
of China. He makes me laugh. He makes me cry. That's what I want.
Okay, so back to our drama, our soap opera here. Emperor Xuanzang is ruling over a golden age of culture and art and poetry. He's doing it all with Empress Wang by his side. His super smart son, Xi Sheng is doing great, and his other son, Crown Prince Li Ying, is a suitable heir to the throne. But another consort was working her way up the ranks. Consort Wu. Emperor Xuanzang, now in his 30s and nearing his 10th year in power, was spending less and less time with his wife, Empress Wang, and more time with consort Wu. Now, none of his previous consorts had gained favor over his wife, but now things were changing.
Maybe this is because Emperor Xuanzang was just one of those guys who always wanted a younger, hotter, newer model. You know, he refused to be happy with the woman he married as she aged.
Sure.
A real DiCaprio of his time. Or maybe it's because Consort Wu was the grandniece of Empress Wu Zetian herself. And she was extremely ambitious and thirsty for power. Now, Xuanzang had always favored his wife, even though he could literally bang anybody he wanted.
Right.
Not like anybody could be like, I don't like it.
Right.
Too bad. And while Wang hadn't provided him with a son, which he did resent, they raised Xi Sheng together as their own. And everyone in the palace loved Empress Wang, including most of the other consorts. But Consort Wu had her eyes on that throne.
Right. And that's just what I'm thinking here is, like, some people said that, like, well, Empress Wang was getting older and he was just, you know, he wasn't liking her as much anymore. But I'm like, it's not like he was resigned to only sleep with her for the rest of his life and he didn't like that she wasn't as hot as she used to be. You know,
right.
Like, it's not like he had any indication that he didn't like her a lot, because for a long time he really did and he had all these other options. So I kind of, speculation station, I think Wu had more to do with it than Wang's just aging, as it was suggested. But we'll see.
I kind of agree, because isn't the point of the Empress is, you know, you don't want to be constantly changing your empress. So
yeah.
You would choose her for different reasons.
Right.
You can just be like the hottest one.
Uh-huh.
That does change. You want to be like, this is the smart one. She's, you know, got an even temper. She's not going to coo me out of nowhere with some other dude. Like, that would be more important, I think, qualities in an empress.
Well, the emperor and consort Wu, I keep almost saying Constance Wu.
Well, I can't wait for Constance Wu to play her in our movie that we're going to make, or our 10-season
make. Thank you. We have so many 10-season shows to make.
They're too long. That's why no one's called us. They're like, it's too long-winded. Cut it down to 5. Then we'll suck.
Well, the Emperor and Consort Wu had several children together, of course, as he and many of his concubines did. It's estimated he had over 50 children with various consorts.
Wow.
But the first three of their children actually died early in their childhood. But their fourth child was a son named Li Mao, or eventually his name was Li Mao. They changed their names all the time, but let's just stick with that for now. Now, this kid, the emperor asked his own brother, the Prince of Ning, to raise him. So he went off to live with the Prince of Ning and his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And all the while, Consort Wu is doing that thing where she just kind of tries to casually talk shit about Empress Wang. Without, you know, actually being treasonous.
Oh.
You know, she's got to kind of carefully just poison the emperor's ear a little bit about his own wife. Gradually taking more and more of the emperor's time, trying to drive a wedge between them. You know, I imagine like a don't you wish your empress was hot like me? Don't you wish your empress was a freak like me? Because, you know, she probably was a freak.
She probably was a freak. Yeah, I could totally see them, like, I don't know, hanging out in bed together like...
Consort Wu, your hair is so beautifully long and flowy like a waterfall. Oh, Emperor, anything you like must be correct, so I'm so happy to please you. If only the Empress had such long, thick hair as mine.
Oh, damn.
It's just too bad, but I suppose she has many other wonderful qualities.
Oh, shit.
You know it's always some shit like some
damn,
shady shit like
you're
that.
You're too good at that.
I know. Watch out, ladies.
Yeah, right?
You want to consort my husband?
Try it. I dare you.
Try it.
ladies, all come woo me.
I
want to give
you.
Diana an opportunity to try and scheme against you.
Uh-oh. I've opened a terrible Pandora's box.
No, Diana, I'm only sleeping with these 5 other women so that you can try and scheme against them. I'm testing your skills.
I want to see your coup skills. Well, Wang was not having it. She's hearing all these jellyfish stings coming from this bitch. She's like, I've done nothing but help this emperor. I helped put his dad in power. I helped put him in power. I helped him make him the great ruler that he is today. I'm raising his son by another woman. I mean, what more do I got to do?
That's true.
So she starts telling him about himself. She's like, hey, don't forget, I'm your wife. That bitch sucks.
She's a little less subtle than Consort Wu.
Well, she don't have no treason to worry about. Yeah. I suppose she can be a little more flat about it. But maybe she should have been a little more subtle because he argued about it with the Empress. So this just pushed them further apart.
She should have been like, oh, don't I smell nice today?
Oh, yes, you smell quite lovely.
Oh, it's too bad that Consort Wu stinks like rotten fish all the time.
Oh, <damn. laughs> Now, before long, Xuanzang was looking for a way to depose his Empress. And he was mostly blaming it on her failure to produce him a son.
Right. Which, again, is weird to me because he already had, like, all these sons and one of them was already the crown prince.
I mean, it's probably just a convenient excuse.
Exactly. I really think this is more of Consort Wu pushing him to get rid of her somehow.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he's kind of fed up. They're, like, fighting. They're an old married couple. And he's like, yeah, this hot young girl is right.
In their 30s.
Yeah. You know, old like us.
Old.
So the emperor went to a close associate of his named Jiang Zhao. And he said, hey, man, I kind of want to depose my wife, you know, get her out of power, strip her of her empress titles. She's just kind of cramping my style. OK. And Jiang Zhao is like, yes, I'm on it. Let me go figure some stuff out. But apparently this dude had loose lips because a short while later, Empress Wang's own brother-in-law came to Emperor Xuanzang and said, hey, this guy Jiang Zhao is talking about deposing your wife? And the emperor, you know, he thinks fast and he's like, whoa, what? That's crazy. I can't believe he would say that. And everyone's like, yeah, this guy sucks. You need to exile him. And Xuanzang is like, yeah, well, you're right about, hey, Jiang Zhao, you can't be talking shit like that. Mm-hmm. I'm exiling you forever. Get out of here. Bye.
But all this made Empress Wang feel real nervous.
Sure.
Because she's always looking over her shoulder. She knows moves are being made against her. Mm-hmm. She thought if she could only have a son, her safety would be assured. So in 724, she went to her brother, Wang Shouyi, for help. Shouyi is like, okay, I got a great idea. How about magic?
Oh.
So he went to a Buddhist monk named Ming Wu, and they started doing some old school mystical shit. They offered sacrifices to the Big Dipper and a Chinese constellation called Nandu. Then they brought the Empress an amulet, which was made from wood that had been struck by lightning. And they carved the symbols for heaven and earth into the amulet alongside the Emperor's name and were like, okay, this is how you get a son. Just wear this amulet.
Ooh, I would love an amulet made of wood that's been struck by lightning.
I mean, at least there's vibes there. That's something cool and hard to find and kind of awesome.
And
I could see that being
statistically red. Feels very unlikely to get struck by lightning again.
True. It might be like a nice talisman against a disaster.
With my luck, I would put that on and immediately get struck by lightning. They'd be like, well, exception proves the rule.
There was actually a lightning rod in the amulet.
Oh, geez. Very rude. Well, okay, so this little magic spell they cooked up was not exactly cool behavior because it sort of looked like trying to use magic to circumvent the will of the gods. Like, if she wasn't naturally having a son, it wasn't meant to be, and now they're trying to use magic to undo that.
Yikes.
There's not a ton of clear reasoning behind this in the research, but whatever happened, this little magic stunt must have been enough for Emperor Xuanzang to use against his wife. Because once word of this magic got out, her brother Shouyi was immediately exiled, and Empress Wang was deposed. She was brought down to the rank of commoner and sent to live in a lesser palace.
Damn!
On his way to exile, her brother Shouyi received the order to commit suicide. And then only 3 months after Wang was deposed in 724, she died. And we don't really know how. But it's said that the emperor always regretted his actions. He felt bad about deposing her and exiling her to this little palace somewhere.
He was like, actually, I was kind of a good ruler when Wang was here.
Yeah.
I feel badly about what I did.
Right. So I'm thinking, speculation station, maybe He expressed that he felt badly. Maybe he was talking about how this seemed like a bad idea. And Consort Wu decided, well, I'm going to go take this lady off the board for good.
Oh, so he can like bring her back.
So he can bring her back. I mean, it's happened before. We've seen in other kingdoms where I remember in Thailand, I mean, this was much more recent.
Right.
But that guy like kicked his wife out and then brought her back and reinstated her stuff. Like it could happen.
Very, very.
So again, speculation station, Consort Wu killed that woman.
I'm with that. I think that is not far-fetched and definitely true.
Or she sent someone, one of her little minions.
Well, I think that's probably more. She didn't do it herself. Right. But I think you're right. She probably ordered someone to do it. Yeah.
I want the Empress to know it was me.
Tell her. Well, whatever happened, Consort Wu definitely did it. But whatever happened, Consort Wu now had the Emperor's full attention. There was no woman more powerful than her at the palace. Mm. She was elevated to the rank of Huifei, which was the highest ranking consort, only beneath the title of Empress. To Wu, all that meant was that she had one more stair to climb. And we'll hear about a whole new batch of schemes that she cooked up right after this.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feeling Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
There's two kinds of people in the world, people who love Health Aid kombucha and people who have never tried it. The bubbly mix of probiotic tea and refreshing juice is delicious and good for your gut health, with great flavors to choose from that you can't help but love. If you've never tried it before, maybe try a bottle or can of passion fruit tangerine or ginger lemon. Your taste buds and your gut will thank you. Look for the brown bottle with an anchor on it and try Health Aid kombucha today.
Health Aid kombucha.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy. And we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
Welcome back to the Tang Dynasty, where Consort Wu is making dangerous moves to bring herself into power. So before things get too dark, let's go down to Poetry Corner and hear another drunken verse by Li Po called A Vindication.
If heaven loved not the wine, a wine star would not be in heaven. If earth loved not the wine, the wine spring would not be on the earth. Since heaven and earth love the wine, need a tippling mortal be ashamed. The transparent wine, I hear, has the soothing virtue of a sage, while the turgid is rich, they say, as the fertile mind of the wise. Both the sage and the wise were drinkers. Why seek for peers among gods and goblins?
Three cups open the grand door to bliss. Take a jugful. The universe is yours. Such is the rapture of the wine that the sober shall never inherit.
I love this. He's straight up like, it is so cool to get drunk that sober people ain't ever even gonna know.
Sober people have not the key to heaven.
I do, and it's right at the bottom of this bottle.
Didn't Benjamin Franklin say alcohol is proof that, gods love us and want us to be happy?
That sounds like him. This is one, I mean, this is a whole other topic we could go on and on about, but so fascinating to me that every culture all across this globe, independently of each other, found out if you let this grape juice go bad,
okay,
it fucks you up in the best way.
That is something that is so universal, literally, with human beings. We want to get wasted.
Yes, we want anything but our standard reality. We took one look around and we're like, nah, this is no good. This Let's try something else.
I don't like it. All right, well, back to the story. Now, Consort Wu was so close to being named Empress, she could almost taste it.
Mm.
All her rivals had been taken out. She had the emperor's favor. And in the year 726, Xuanzang decided he wanted to elevate her to the rank of empress.
Oh.
All her dreams were coming true. But his officials were like, wait a minute. Hold on there, partner. Not so fast. Because remember, Consort Wu is the grandniece of the Empress Wu Zetian. And Wu Zetian tried to eliminate the entire Tang dynasty and rename it for herself before she was overthrown. Oof. So her family still had a lot of beef with the imperial throne.
Mm.
So his chancellors are like, guess what? The people of China don't like the Wus. And more specifically, they don't like Consort Wu.
Oof.
She sucks. Everyone knows it.
Yeah.
Everyone but you, I guess.
Right.
So this is really not a smart move.
You know those people where it's just like, you know, someone's dating someone and everyone in your friend group hates this person.
Mm-hmm.
But they just, you just can't break them up.
No.
And you know, you can, it's so clear that they're like manipulating them and using them to get what they want.
God, it's hard.
Oh, it's so hard. It's hard.
Because then you do, so often they will break up and you get to say all your true feelings and then they go get back together.
And then they get back together.
And you're like, well, damn, that's what I was supposed to do. Don't let me make a speech at your wedding, I guess.
Right. Now, his advisors also pointed out the obvious political struggle that would come with naming her Empress, because the emperor had two sons with Consort Wu, but he had already named his son Li Ying the crown prince and heir to the throne.
Mm.
If Consort Wu was named Empress, things were going to get messy around the line of succession. She's going to want her son to be emperor next, and then it's going to put your boy Li Ying in danger.
Mm.
So the emperor heard all this. He's like, all right, you're right, you're right, you're right. Okay, bad move.
No doubt, no doubt.
I won't name her Empress, but everybody listen here and listen good. Y'all are basically going to treat her like an empress, okay? Everybody in this palace, she is your empress in all but name, okay? She is number one. She's HBIC.
Mm-hmm.
She's, you wait on her hand and foot and you do what she says.
That's right. But obviously, Consort Wu was not thrilled about this little compromise because she'd been working towards that empress title for a while. I kind of get it. Nobody wants to be like, you're the CEO of Disney in name only.
Damn. I would take it. I would be the CEO of Disney in name only. Well, name and salary.
I don't know about all that. Name and salary, maybe. But you know they're going to do some dumb shit and then let you, like, usher you in front of everybody to be stoned to
death.
Yeah,
but I still got that, like, $35 billion a year, right?
That's true. And maybe you get to go to the parks for free.
Ooh.
Have we thought about that?
Wait a minute. CEO of Disney has to get free park admission, right?
What if Bob Chapek right now is like, $300? Well, all right.
Yeah. Well, now he's got a pen.
And now he's got a problem with it. So Consort Wu's not super happy about this, but she's adaptable. She knew she didn't need the title to get everything she ever wanted. So her mother was made a lady, her brothers were given official positions at court, and her sons and daughters were made princes and princesses. And Xuanzang's chancellors were right. What she really wanted was to make her son, Li Mao, the new crown prince and heir to the imperial throne. But she needed a little more help to get him there. And that brings us to this week's Villain of the Week. Li Linfu.
Oh, Li Linfu, this squirrely little creep. He had risen the ranks in court through good connections and pure luck and lots of scheming and wheeling and dealing. His uncle was Jiang Jiao. If you remember, he was the emperor's friend who took the blame for trying to depose Empress Wang the first time.
That's right, he got exiled. Uh-huh. That's right.
Now, Linfu was nicknamed Ganu, which I looked at translations, and as far as I can tell, it means like a knee or a knee-like bend. So maybe this guy was like crooked. He was always bent over, or maybe he was like always kneeling down to get what he wanted.
Mm.
Or maybe he was always on his knees to get what he wanted. You know what I'm saying? You know what I'm saying?
Oh my goodness.
I don't know. They called him Ganu, and it doesn't seem like it was a kind nickname. They sort of used it disparagingly, but he also owned it. Like the penguin in Gotham.
Okay, right? Yeah. Crooked makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, I think crooked.
I had a history professor, by the way, who I loved because actually he would call Li Po this.
Oh, yeah.
Whenever he had an alcoholic historical figure, he would go, he was a bit of an elbow crooker.
Oh, that's good.
I always liked that.
Yeah.
I know it's not really related, but it makes me laugh.
Well, this guy, Linfu, nicknamed Ganu, he applied to a low-level position at the Ministry of Justice called the Sumen Longzhan. But the chancellor at the time said, quote, "People who are to serve as Long must have good talent and virtues. Ganu is no Long."
Owie.
Uh-huh. He ain't got no talent or virtues.
Linfu's like, am I at my roast right now?
Yeah, pretty much.
I thought this
much.
Was an interview.
All the higher-ups were roasting him, but he also had connections. Somebody must have been pulling some strings for him because just a few days after the chancellor said that, Linfu got that position anyway.
Ooh, okay. So with friends in all the right places, Linfu worked his way up the ranks until he was working under the staff of Li Ying himself, the crown prince and heir to the throne.
Wow.
So he's already trying to get as close to power as possible. And he could smell it when other people were doing the same.
Mm.
So after Empress Wang was deposed and Consort Wu started making moves, he wanted in on the action.
Oh, yeah.
This guy's like an ancient Chinese Varys from Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm.
He had a bunch of eunuchs around the palace, bringing him all the whispers they heard, his little sparrows. So he used them to get a message to Consort Wu, like, hey, hi, I work for Li Ying, great guy and everything, but something is just kind of telling me, little gut instinct, that Li Mao would be such a great emperor. So if you would be interested, check yes or no and return messenger.
Send the eunuch back to me.
Send the eunuch back with your answer forthwith.
Stamps a big yes on the eunuch's head. It's like, oh.
She probably brands it into his arm.
Oh, no. True. Poor eunuchs. But man, it is like Game of Thrones. Like all these, that's where the power is.
Yes.
You know, how often do we see this, again, a lot of TV shows that we watch now, where the servants, you know, have all the info. They know the dirt.
Hell yeah.
But if you get on their side, you get what you need.
It's very true.
Mm-hmm.
Very true. That's still true, honestly. I mean, if you think about being a server or something,
right.
Like how often you go to like a fancy party at a hotel or whatever.
Oh my
and
God.
Like, if you know the server or the maitre d', you know, like whoever is in charge, you can get back wherever you need to go.
I remember.
Take you where you need to go.
You were working a catering gig and you came back and you said, hey, just guess what I heard? Chapex out. Bob Iger's coming back. And I was like, damn, you heard that?
I heard the call.
Well, Consort Wu now had a really good player in her pocket in Linfu, and she started advising him on who he should support that could later help him out. So he would like go recommend some minister to be appointed that she gave him a heads up on, and then later that person would remember him and say, oh yeah, you spoke up for me when it came down to my nomination. Mm-hmm. Well, maybe I owe you a little favor.
Mm,
so
the world is built on little favors.
Oh, exactly. It was a long game. But by the mid-730s, Linfu was close enough to Emperor Xuanzong that he was able to just flatter the guy constantly. Oh, Emperor, oh, you smell so nice today. That was a very good decision, Emperor. Oh, I love the way you wear your shoes. You know, whatever it took. Flattery will get you everywhere, especially with Xuanzang. Mm-hmm. And between this and Consort Wu's influence, Lin Fu became one of the emperor's favored advisors. Now, it was all about convincing him to switch his heirs. And then in the year 736, the perfect situation arose.
Li Ying met up with two of his brothers, Li Yao and Li Ju, who were both princes born of two different consorts. Mm. Together, they started talking shit about how their mothers, who were all at different times favored consorts of the emperor, mm-hmm. had all lost favor to this Consort Wu lady. Oh, you know, basically, they're like, man, dad's new girlfriend sucks. Like, right. That's like pretty harmless stuff. But this guy, Yang Hui, who was a male consort for one of Consort Wu's princess daughters and a total wet blanket, overheard them, and he goes running to Consort Wu, telling her all about it. She probably had to hide the biggest smile of her life.
Seriously.
She's like, finally, my time has come. She called Li Ying to come before her and the emperor. As soon as Ying walked in, she burst into tears and starts yelling at him, like all dramatic, like, you know, it's one thing to insult me. I'm used to it. But in doing so, you've defamed your father, the emperor. I just don't know how we could move forward from this. I really don't know.
Oh, wow. You are too good at this.
In another time and place. Right. I might have been a Consort Wu myself.
Yeah, you could have really been the power behind the throne.
Doubtful. Yeah. I feel like I'd be one of those consorts who's like, I'm just going to like hang out and clean things or whatever y'all enjoy.
It depends if you got bored enough or not. Because
true,
like,
very true.
You know, I don't think you would have felt like getting up and doing all the work. But not that you're not a hard worker, but it would have been worth it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a lot of responsibility. Although you do like taking on more responsibility than you actually like.
That is true. And so honestly, if I could convince myself, it's for my son. This is for my son.
Oh,
it's for the
okay.
good of China. Like, I probably would do a bunch of crazy shit. If it was just for me, I would not bother. But
that's true. You do not take care of yourself.
If I thought it was like a bigger picture situation, I could probably do all kinds of weird shit.
Well, okay. So Emperor Xuanzang is super mad about this. You know, his son, the crowned prince, the future of the empire, is out here talking shit about Consort Wu, who is supposed to basically be the empress at this point.
Mm.
And he considered deposing Li Ying, stripping him of that title. Consort Wu, of course, she's just like drooling all over herself at this point, like, yes, this is it. I can't wait. We're almost there.
I mean, if you think that's the best course of action, of course you should. I hate that it's come to this.
Damn. So he's like about to sign the paper, but his senior chancellor, Zhang Zhuling, said, hey man, look, I'm going back through the history books here, and every time a crown prince gets replaced, the empire ended up taking a serious hit. It's not a good move. Mm. We're always like, we're losing states. There's a lot of people fighting. It gets ugly. It's a bad idea. So I think we should stick with what we got. So Zhang managed to keep Li Ying in the line of succession, which of course meant that Li Lin Fu had to get rid of Zhang.
Oh, man. Mm-hmm. He put himself in the crossfire.
Oh, my God. And within a year and through some very complicated schemery that I swear to you could play out as an entire season arc on this show we're talking about. Look into this history between Li Lin Fu and Zhang Zhuling because it's wild. It's so schemey. It's such good soap opera drama stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of it, Li Lin Fu managed to accuse Zhang of factionalism, and the emperor demoted him. And this moment, him demoting Zhang, is believed to be the beginning of the downfall of Xuanzang's reign, crumbling from its once golden age.
Hmm.
Historian Sima Guang wrote, quote, after Zhang Zhuling was demoted, officials were all concerned about keeping their positions, and honest words no longer had a place in government. And we've seen what happens when honest words no longer have a place in government.
Let this be a cautionary tale, but it won't, because it already happened and nobody learned anything.
Just keeps happening. Honestly, I don't think it's ever stopped happening. It's been happening since the dawn of time.
True. Very true.
But this got particularly ugly at this point. Just couldn't trust anybody anymore.
Well, Wu and Lin Fu had everything in place. And in 737, they made their big move. Wu sent a message to Li Ying and the same two brothers who were talking shit about her before, and said, quote, "There are bandits in the palace. Please report at once in full armor." So all three men suited up. They charged into the palace, hundreds of warriors behind them, ready to fight. And guess what? Consort Wu went straight to the emperor, like, "Oh my god, your three crazy sons are back. They're trying to do a treason."
Oh god.
And he asks his eunuchs, who are like, "Yeah, they're definitely here. They're in full armor, swinging their swords around." So Yang Hui, the same wet blanket who ratted on them for talking shit about Consort Wu last year, is like, "Wow, formal accusation of treason against those three."
Wow. So Xuan Song heard all this and he ordered the royal guards to disarm the three princes and their armies. And the three princes are getting, you know, just rammed into the corner. All their swords are getting taken away.
Dang.
And they're shouting like, "No, we're being wronged. Let me speak to my father. Let me speak to my father." But Wu's allies kept them silenced. Xuan Song consulted with his chancellors. But of course, guess who was the most powerful dude in court right now? Li Lin Fu. Well, Lin Fu turns to the emperor, who's facing this very difficult decision about what to do, and he said, quote, "This is your imperial majesty's family matter. We will not interfere."
Oh.
Which is so tricky because he's basically saying like, "Hey, emperor, if your family matters to you more than the empire, I am not going to get involved. Like, you totally make that decision for yourself. If you want to favor them over, you know, this whole treason accusation, that's on you."
Mm.
So he's basically making it so he has to do something about it.
What a tricky little
bitch.
It's
so gross. He's such a, like, Grima worm tongue.
Totally.
Uh-huh, like that little finger. Yeah, like the guy just whispering things to the king and making him do shit. And so without speaking to the princes, he deposed all three, stripped them of their powers, and ordered their deaths by suicide.
No, not all three of his sons.
All
That's
three.
So sad.
Yep.
I'm a little mad at Xuan Song. It feels like he's kind of got his head up his ass at the end of his reign here.
They've really
the later part of his reign here.
There's definitely, like, you can't not blame him for making all these terrible decisions that he made.
Mm-hmm.
But he is also, like, being so hardcore manipulated right now. But he's fallen for it too. I mean, there's an element of it that's, like, willingly.
That is, I guess that's where I get
a
little mad, because I'm like, surely, isn't that part of being a king, queen, emperor, president, whatever? People are going to try to manipulate you to their own ends.
Yeah.
And you need to have a strong enough sense of yourself and whatever.
Right.
That you can not play into their hands. But, you know, as you say, that he's got all these people running around. He probably doesn't know half of anything that's going on.
Right.
So.
And they're so good at it. It's one of those things, too, where it's like, well, yeah, he could go out and protect his son. But after everyone has said all the things they said.
Right.
Does that not look like he's ignoring his advisors and just doing, you know, putting his family first, which an emperor can't do?
Right.
There's some, I don't want to get too spoilery, but it reminds me of some of the stuff in towards the end of House of the Dragon in the first season. Not to just bring it back to Game of Thrones again, but similar kind of stuff where, you know, she had a decision to make. And once someone said, "Hey, let me do it." You know, she couldn't say no, because then it looked like she was protecting her family and not being a strong ruler.
That's right.
So even though it was definitely the wrong decision, she wasn't really able to make the right one without looking bad.
Very true.
I think there's some of that in there, too. But he definitely is not blameless in this.
Well, unfortunately, due to his stupid decisions, the crown prince is now dead.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, immediately, Consort Wu and Li Lin Fu start dropping hints that her son, Li Mao, should probably go ahead and be the crowned prince. I mean, he's standing right here. Why not? But Xuan Song was pretty depressed by all this. Which, why not?
Right.
Three of his sons are dead. His favorite wife died years ago. Like, he's making some bad choices. So he didn't rush into any decisions about his heir. Over the next few months, it's said that Consort Wu was haunted by visions of the three princes. And later that year, only in her 40s, she became inexplicably ill. In December, she passed away, and many say she died of fright.
Ooh.
Wow.
She got that ghost sickness.
She had a dream where they were like, oh, 1, 2, 3, Prince Zara before you. And then she had it stuck in their head every day after that. She's like, just kill me now.
Just let me die. Oh, no.
I'm three afraid princes. I'll never get three princes out of my head.
Well, this was a real kick in the pants to old Lin Fu. Because without Consort Wu's backing, his machinations became more obvious and he started to fall for the Emperor's favor. Xuanzong posthumously honored Consort Wu by naming her Empress Zhenshun, which means the virtuous and serene empress.
<Sorry. I know. laughs> That is hilarious.
He says that and someone at court is like, bullshit, bullshit.
Untrue. I feel like he turned to them and he's like, what would be the funniest possible thing we could name her?
Well, this is part of it too, because I'm like, it's almost a bigger diss that he named her empress after she died.
That's true.
I mean, it wasn't, because back then, like, this was definitely an honor to have your family, you know, have your name in the books forever.
Books, yeah, sure.
I mean, her Wikipedia page now is under the name Empress Zhenshun, not Constance Wu. So, but still, it does feel like kind of a dig. Like, okay, now I'll make you empress now that you're dead.
And I'll call you virtuous and serene.
Yeah, right. Sarcasm. It's a backslash S
extremely
at the end of her name.
Sarcasm font.
But even though he named her empress, he was pretty sore about everything that went down with his sons, and he refused to put any official state mourning periods in place for her death.
And everyone was like, phew, we didn't want to mourn her anyway.
Yeah. So, I mean, Speculation Station, again, it feels like this is kind of a dig. Like, he was not really honoring her. He was kind of acknowledging that he was pissed off about how she treated him.
Yeah.
When Li Mao, her son, was once again suggested as the heir to the throne, the emperor said, you know what? No, I'm not doing it.
Oh.
I put my foot down. I know who my heir is. It's my boy, Li Sheng, the stew baby who was raised by me and Empress Wang. He's real smart. He's real savvy. I like him. I'm making him the crown prince and heir to the throne. And he was crowned in 738.
Nice. Yes. There you go, stew baby. Way to hold out.
True. And the best decision that Xuanzong has made in many years.
Many
at this
a
point.
Year, yeah, right. It sort of makes me feel like Empress Wang was even more instrumental than people say.
Right.
Because after she died, he immediately was like kind of doing some dumb shit.
Right.
So it's like clearly she was there being like, babe, what? No, let's do this instead.
Yeah.
Now, after he crowned Sheng, Xuanzong really started to slip.
Mm.
It's said that he brought tens of thousands of beautiful women into his palace to please him, and many of them were never allowed to leave.
Oh.
Pretty creepy. But then he met Yang Guifei, who would capture his heart for the rest of his life. But that distracted him from his duties and left a power vacuum that our friend Li Linfu was all too happy to exploit.
Mm, that guy.
It all ended in tragedy. And was documented in a poem called A Song of Everlasting Sorrow. And we will hear all about that in our next episode.
Oh, God, there's so much more.
Isn't that what you wanted to start with? The Song of Everlasting Sorrow?
Oh, yeah. I found The Song of Everlasting Sorrow and was like, oh, here's a cool story. And then I found
all this
Consort Wu and Prince and Empress Wang and all this stuff. There's so much leading up to it that it had to be a prequel episode.
This
basically.
Is like when you did Calico Jack and you found out that whole thing about
His parents,
Bonnie's parents.
Yeah.
And their spoon situation.
I love when one story leads to another. Like,
oh, yeah.
It's so great. And this one is like, it's the same guy, but everyone else, well, Li Linfu is coming back, of course.
Ooh.
I guess he's the villain of the week.
Yeah, that's right.
And he will be back to cause a lot of trouble. And it's just so interesting to see that period, like we said, when Li Linfu got Zhang demoted.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there are many places where things started to go downhill, but that was really the linchpin where it was never coming back after that. And the Tang Dynasty never really ascended to its heights again.
Well, and you see it like they said, he got rid of all the people who were just paying to be there for power and position.
Right.
And things were going great because you actually had people who knew what they were doing, wanted the same things as you, like all that sort of thing, wanted what was best. And then the minute you turn it over to people who are just looking out for themselves, that's when everything starts crumbling.
Yeah. Yep.
It's like one of the easiest things to see and one of the hardest things to do, I guess, if
yeah.
you're in power, is to be like, I know exactly how it should go, and people are hard.
People are hard, and there's always somebody scheming for power.
Yeah,
very true. And sometimes those people are really good at it. Because if you can read people, if you can know how to talk to them and tell them what they want to hear, and if you know how to make promises that you don't necessarily have to deliver on, you can get a lot
true,
done.
Very true.
Some call it lying.
but his name should be Lai Lin Fu.
Oh, take that. Dis from centuries later.
He's like, but you're still saying my name, aren't you, bitch?
Ugh, I guess we are.
Yeah.
Jerk.
Sadly. Sad but true.
Yeah. What today, right now, in this room, in our lives, would be different if Li Lin Fu didn't suck so bad? You know, Consort Wu had never come along, or if he gave the stew to that, to his consort.
That's right, to Sisheng.
And
that's
Li Sisheng wasn't born. I love those little things. And I mean, I don't love them, but I'm fascinated by those parts of history where you're like, this one dude, I mean, it really shows you one person mm-hmm. can make such a difference because, you know, China might be a completely different country today, which of course would mean the world is a completely different place today.
Very true.
Had this one little dick not come in to screw things up for everyone.
Little dick.
I love this stuff, and I can't wait for the next episode.
I know. Chinese history is so rich.
Oh, my God.
With this kind of stuff, because, of course, it goes on, it goes back so long.
Yeah.
But, and it's so meticulously recorded.
Right.
But, like you said, so much soap opera shenanigans happening. Uh-huh. It's just, like, insane. I love it.
It's true of so many royal families. And then what's interesting is like when you, we've seen this on this show, when you get down into just like a regular ass person's household, some of this stuff is just as dramatic mm-hmm. on such a smaller scale, yeah. mm-hmm. but it's just as rich and interesting. But there is something about it when it's in these palaces with all these, you know, with the consequences, the stakes are so high.
Right.
When you're literally talking about a world power and two people like trying to undermine each other for it.
Right. Consort Wu is out here like, this is for me. And everyone else is like, no, bitch, it changes everything for everyone.
Right. Right. Ugh, I love it. I love it.
We hope you loved it, too. You'll have to let us know. Please do reach out. Our email address is ridicromance@gmail.com.
That's right. Or you can find us on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Oh Great, it's Eli.
I'm at Dynamite Boom.
And the show is at ridicromance.
Yes.
Follow along.
We love hearing from y'all. Whatever you got mm-hmm. to say, send it our way. Throw us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It really helps people discover us and start listening. And I guess until next time.
We'll see you at the next one.
Love you.
Bye-bye.
So long, friends. It's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.
You don't have to hop a plane to see the world. This month's Free This Week picks on Xfinity brings you around the globe. Experience life at a European resort in the hit comedic drama Seaside Hotel from Walter Presents. Watch romance blossom abroad in a Scottish love scheme from Hallmark Movies Channel. Celebrate Earth Month with planet-saving docuseries like EcoEye with Duncan Stewart on Magellan TV. And be transported to your happy place with iHeartRadio's Feelin' Good playlist. Just say Free This Week into your Xfinity voice remote.
The Toolkit Podcast is where your favorite filmmakers come to talk about their craft and process.
I don't want a sloppy angle in my movie ever.
It's like being a dancer. You find the freedom in the structure.
It's where Tarantino, Gerwig, Scorsese, and Jordan Peele discuss their latest films, and showrunners take us behind the scenes of the best of TV.
Hosted by IndieWire's craft team, Toolkit is an award-winning podcast that gets at the heart of what really matters for filmmakers, like Spike Lee.
It comes back to this storytelling. What can I use in my toolbox?
We went from normal life, healthy child, to acute lymphoblastic leukemia, or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
The wait is almost over. Get ready for the 2024 NFL season as the full schedule is announced. Bring it on. Every rivalry, every rematch, every rookie debut, every game revealed. The 2024 NFL schedule release, presented by Verizon, coming in May. Live on NFL Network, ESPN2, and streaming on NFL Plus. Terms and conditions apply to NFL Plus. Visit NFL.com/schedule release to learn more.
Hey guys, back at the playground again, huh?
Yep. You know what this playground could use? A wine country.
Heck yeah! And some waves, so we could go surfing.
Oh, yeah. Ah, love that!
A redwood forest would be cool.
I'm in!
Ah, ski slopes.
Let's do it!
Can a girl go shopping?
Yeah, baby!
Wait! Did we just invent California?
Discover why California is the ultimate playground at visitcalifornia.com.